As Arthur ran, darting and panting down the side of the mountain, he suddenly felt the whole bulk of the mountain move very, very slightly beneath him. The land began to slide, and he suddenly felt the force of the word landslide in a way which had never been apparent to him before. It had always been just a word to him, but now he was suddenly and horribly aware that sliding is a strange and sickening thing for land to do. It was doing it with him on it. He felt ill with fear and shaking. The ground slid. The mountain slurred. He slipped. He fell. He stood. He slipped again and ran. The avalanche began. Stones, then rocks, then boulders which pranced past him like clumsy puppies, only much, much bigger, much, much harder and heavier, and almost infinitely more likely to kill you if they fell on you. He ran as if running was a terrible sweating sickness. His heart pounded to the rhythm of the pounding geological frenzy around him. The logic of the situation, i.e. that he was clearly bound to survive if the next foreshadowed incident in the saga of his inadvertent persecution of Agrajag was to happen, was utterly failing to impinge itself on his mind or exercise any restraining influence on him at this time. And suddenly he tripped again, and was hurled forward by his considerable momentum. But just at the moment that he was about to hit the ground astoundingly hard, he saw lying directly in front of him a small navy blue holdall that he knew for a fact he had lost in the baggage retrieval system at Athens Airport some 10 years in his personal timescale previously. And in his astonishment he missed the ground completely and bobbed off into the air with his brain singing. What he was doing was this. He was flying. He glanced around him in surprise, but there could be no doubt that that was what he was doing. No part of him was touching the ground, and no part of him was even approaching it. He was simply floating there with boulders hurtling through the air around him. He could now do something about that. Blinking with the non-effort of it, he wafted higher into the air, and now the boulders were hurtling through the air beneath him. He looked downwards with intense curiosity. Between him and the shivering ground were now some 30 feet of empty air. Empty, that is, if you discounted the boulders, which didn't stay in it for long, but bounded downwards in the iron grip of the law of gravity, the same law which seemed, all of a sudden, to have given Arthur a sabbatical. It occurred to him, almost instantly, with the instinctive correctness that self-preservation instills in the mind, that he mustn't try to think about it, that if he did, the law of gravity would suddenly glance sharply in his direction and demand to know what the hell he thought he was doing up there, and all would suddenly be lost. So, he thought about tulips. It was difficult, but he did. He thought about the pleasing, firm roundness of the bottom of tulips. He thought about the interesting variety of colours they came in, and wondered what proportion of the total number of tulips that grew, or had grown, on the earth would be found within a radius of 1 mile from a windmill. After a while, he got dangerously bored with this train of thought, felt the air slipping away beneath him, felt that he was drifting down into the paths of the bouncing boulders that he was trying so hard not to think about, so he thought about Athens Airport for a bit, and that kept him usefully annoyed for about 5 minutes, at the end of which he was startled to discover that he was now floating about 200 yards above the ground. He wondered for a moment how he was going to get back down to it, but instantly shied away from that area of speculation again and tried to look at the situation steadily. He was flying. What was he going to do about it? He looked back down at the ground. He didn't look at it hard, but did his best just to give it an idle glance, as it were, in passing. There were a couple of things he couldn't help noticing. One was that the eruption of the mountain seemed now to have spent itself. There was a crater just a little way beneath the peak, presumably where the rock had caved in on top of the huge, cavernous cathedral, the statue of himself and the sadly abused figure of Agrajag. The other was his holdall, the one he had lost at Athens Airport. It was sitting pertly on a piece of clear ground, surrounded by exhausted boulders, but apparently hit by none of them. Why this should be, he could not speculate. But since this mystery was completely overshadowed by the monstrous impossibility of the bag being there in the first place, It was not a speculation he really felt strong enough for anyway. The thing is, it was there. And the nasty, fake leopard skin bag seemed to have disappeared, which was all to the good, if not entirely to the explicable.